Hey everyone, you're on the Arms Room Show with Glenn.
And Drew.
And thank you to all of our patrons for supporting the show. We really appreciate your patronage. Don't forget about the extra show for our $10 and above patrons. We just did it last week on loyalty. So if you're not a patron, consider supporting the show. And if you go to the $10 level, which is our whopping $10 level, is our highest level, like it's nothing to support the show, you get the extra show, and every month we talk about something usually more personal to us. We've talked about religion. We've talked about divorce. We've talked about male depression. We've talked about suicide. We've talked about raising kids, why we started in business, the fights we have on our team. I think we've talked about all kinds of personal stuff. And this month it was all about loyalty. So if you haven't checked it out, make sure you check that show out. Remember our patrons that – through your support, we don't just keep the Arms Room on the air, but it's also how we do all of our community service. So all of the free classes that we give to churches and schools and civic organizations, it costs us. You know, people see free and they're like, oh, it's free. It's just like your guys' time. We actually still pay our people to do that. So any of our instructors who are anywhere ever working, very rarely are we doing it totally for free on our end, you know, and it costs us supplies and it costs us fuel and it costs us all that. And so especially when we're out of state doing that kind of work, we do that because we love to do it, but it also is provided in part by the support from our patrons of the show. So thank you guys for that. It really means a lot to us, and you're having a good impact on your community. Drew and I had a good time this weekend. Not only did we hang out with the kids and have a great time as usual, took them to the Pima Air and Space Museum yesterday, which if you haven't been, is tons of fun.
It was.
Really great museum. But Drew and I competed in the Ragnar – what do they call that now? It's a trail relay. Is that the official term, the Ragnar Trail Relay? So we went and did the Ragnar Trail Relay. For those of you who don't know, it's about a 15-mile race through trails done in relays. So you do like – a 4.5-mile loop that's really technical, a 4.5-mile loop that's pretty much just a desert run, and then like a 7-mile loop that's a mix of a desert run and some technical uphill climbing stuff. So, and you've got a team, 8 people, you go out in legs, so it's literally a relay, and you're there for really the race. You're there for maybe, what, 18 hours or so, and everyone's just kind of running. And when you're not running, you're hanging out at camp, chilling with everybody else and doing your thing.
Yeah.
So it's a great time. If you guys have never, if you even mildly like running or you hate running like I do, but your wife drags you to these things, then you can look into the Ragnar relays. And I actually really do have a good time. I do enjoy running. And my hardest, the hardest loop was actually my last loop. I ran it at like 4 o'clock in the morning or something on Sunday or Saturday, I mean. And it was my favorite loop actually.
Yeah, red's my favorite. Yeah. I like red. I like yellow. Green's my least favorite.
Yeah, so the easiest loop is actually one I don't like.
Yeah, because it's flat and boring.
It's boring.
It is super boring.
The technical one, you're so busy trying not to die, and I had to run it in the heat. It was like 85, which doesn't sound like a lot until you're running up and down a bunch of hills.
And the sun is and a deadly laser.
Oh, my God. There was absolutely no cover anywhere. But the red loop, I got this great burst. Like the last 2 miles, I was just feeling like – total runner's high, man. I just really enjoyed the last couple miles, and I ran the whole mountain, which I was really proud of, and then coming down the other side, it was just killing it, man. And I was chasing this other runner for a while, and that's always lots of fun to really find that competition because it's pitch black and you're all by yourself, you know.
Well, so I did.
You get the chance to run with somebody. It's kind of nice.
I only ran green in the day, and it was really hot, and I was pretty drunk when I ran it.
Yeah, that's the – so the other thing about Ragnar is everybody drinks. So we're all a little meh when we're running anyway.
Yeah, it's not our best time, so.
Yeah, it works. It works.
Yellow, I enjoyed yellow, but I had a busted ankle, and that was actually my fastest.
It was your fastest time. You just wanted to get it done.
Yeah.
Get rid of this.
Yeah, who needs an ankle?
It was fun. It was fun.
It was fun.
So in the studio with us today, we have Sky Steele, who is the CEO of Streetlight USA. Thanks for joining us, Sky.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Couple things that I'm interested to hear your comments on, if you have any. And one of them is the Rittenhouse trial. So as Drew and I discussed this, I'm happy to hear what you have to say about this. So one of our other instructors – so we have this big group thread that goes on and in one of the texting apps. And we talk about all kinds of stuff and we talk about these kinds of events. And so one of our other instructors wrote a really good set of ideas about the Rittenhouse Trial that we're watching. I've defined it, or described, I should say, as either a really good sitcom or a really bad documentary. I mean, watching this poor kid have to go through this system, and it's not a justice system, it's a legal system. It's a system built only to perpetuate itself. It has nothing to do with providing justice to anybody involved. Watching him go through this has been really telling of how these kind of things will continue to play out in the future. And I really think that this whole case is going to set a major precedence for how not just self-defense, but opposing forces, so to speak, or different ideas are going to be held up to court standards in the future, which is terrifying because how this trial is going is insane. But one of the things that one of our instructors came up with is this. He said, one, you need to know defense laws to the absolute letter, federal and state. You need to be as versed as your legal team. And having been through a couple legal processes myself, I can tell you that your lawyer cannot be your only resource of information. And I know you guys deal with a lot of legal stuff as well, so I would say you've kind of experienced the same thing.
We have.
I mean, lawyers make mistakes. They're humans.
They do.
They can't know everything.
Absolutely. It's absolutely true.
So you have to know the laws. And so a lot of times we deal with so many students from, you know, self-defense and things like that, and they just rely on calling the legal system and going, okay, cool, like this is the thing that's going to save me, but I don't necessarily see that happening. It's like if you don't know what the laws are going into it, you're probably already making mistakes going into the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get there, well, it's too late. You've already made all the mistakes. Now your lawyer can't save you. Or in court, like we've seen with the Kyle Rittenhouse situation, because he does know the law and he's a pretty intelligent kid, he's able to kind of defend himself as well. The second point he came up with was you need to be able to step away from your actions and view them as much as possible objectively. If you choose to testify, you'd better be 100% unimpeachable. If that's not possible, so you have to be able to punch back. Like Kyle, never equivocate on the stand or in the facts, and never give the prosecution an inch. I think that this is a really interesting point as well, because nobody is unimpeachable. We all have skeletons in the closet. We all have things they're going to dig up on you. You're going to have made a mistake in what you said. And if you make a mistake in a word or a phrase that you're using, especially when you're on the stand, they're going to attack that. And then if you start backpedaling, they got you. So it's like you can't equivocate on the stand. It's been really interesting watching Kyle Rittenhouse and how things have been going in his case and watching him on the stand. I thought he did a phenomenal job. I don't know if you – did you watch the
– I watched a little bit of it, and I agree. Yes, I agree.
I was amazed at how well he did, you know, especially for – being a young man.
I haven't watched any of it, I'll be honest.
If you should watch, at least watch Kyle's testimony.
Okay.
It's hard to watch a kid, you know, have to on the stand in front of people. He was 17 when he shot him.
Okay, and that was a year ago, right?
Yeah, so he's like at least 18 now.
So now he's going to be tried as an adult regardless.
Well, it's a murder case, so it doesn't matter at this point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But what's interesting with watching him is watching him go through that psychological process of having to recall on the stand in front of strangers, taking people's lives and it being treated so objectively, which to you know, this point is you have to view your actions objectively, not subjectively, not emotionally. And when you view his actions objectively, we can't just say, well, he was just a kid, or, you know, it's very emotional for him, because obviously he gets emotional on the stand, which is understandable. He's talking about taking people's lives, the kind of stuff that affects you for the rest of your life. So it's interesting to watch this whole thing and really see the points that they're attacking, which is – some of the points are insane. But the last point that I want to share here is social media should be absolutely whitewashed of any content you don't want to defend.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, text histories in this case, text histories were subpoenaed, and people in this case, just this case alone, are absolutely getting hammered by it. Kyle is not a turd necessarily, and every move he's made before and after, which they're bringing the case despite the pretrial orders of not using his post-shooting behavior to try him on, because that's not fair, but they're using it anyway.
Yeah. Shocker.
Is being examined in the post-light fact, and the fact that, you know, these jurors, when you look at them, like, they are astoundingly stupid. Jurors are astoundingly dumb. And I've often heard it said that, you know, people who find themselves on juries are just people who weren't smart enough to get out of jury duty, or they're like, you know, the old retirees in the community, which may or may not necessarily be true all the time. I'm not saying that every juror on that jury is stupid, but I think juries as a collective are incredibly unknowledgeable, and you're drawing from the standard base of the population, so to speak. I mean, that's the idea, your jury of your peers. So look at the educational base of the majority of people that you know that you would consider the average person. What do they know about self-defense law? Probably nothing. If anything, it's probably wrong or mildly incorrect. And what do they know about the legal system or the legal process? Probably not much. We don't teach about judicial processes in school anymore. And so if it's not taught in school, most people don't know.
We touch base on it. It's not – it should be a bigger portion of kids' education than what it is.
Yeah.
But that's how you keep the mass population dumb and non-involved.
It's been an interesting thing to watch, and it's scary. And, you know, as someone and people who carry guns and teach people how to carry guns, it is something I just really hope I never have to do. It has nothing to do with the violent conflict. That's not what concerns me. It's the legal system afterwards is the concerning factor. That you can do everything as it's supposed to be done and still end up in hot water because of circumstance or whatever. I mean, you know, look at this kid. Here's a kid who in some gray area circumstances managed to kill what, a child rapist, a domestic abuser, and shot the other guy who's also a turd.
Good for Kyle.
And you're like, man.
Cleaning the streets.
It's like the other side wants us to – we don't need the police. We'll police our own communities. Kyle Rittenhouse is out there policing his community, and we're going to damn him for it. How this case plays out, I think, will set a great precedence for, like I said, not only self-defense law. We have to look at this objectively and say this isn't just about self-defense law. This isn't just about defending yourself with a gun. This is about defending a lot more than that. And I think how this ends up is going to be telling of how things are going to go in the future for people.
It will.
Which is scary to think about. But last piece of news that we really have is the Oklahoma National Guard mutiny, which is interesting. So the Oklahoma National Guard, I'm going to pull up this guy's name, Brig General Thomas Mancino, issued an order halting the Oklahoma Army and Air National Guard's mandatory vaccine rollout on November 11, less than 24 hours after his sudden appointment as the state's top general. So literally the governor was like, you're the guy and I'll fix this. And he showed up and went, no, and is actually halting it for the entire Oklahoma, both Army and Air National Guard. I'd like to see where this goes.
Yeah, me too.
Yep.
I'm proud of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of leadership we need.
It is.
Now he's putting his whole career on the line. I mean, to be a brig gen, I mean, yeah, that's the first level of general, but you're still at this point have been through all the other, you know, officer ranks, and you know, this guy's probably got 15 to 20 years in easily.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a lot of time invested in his career and in his life. And it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
Well, he'll be suicide two shots.
God, I hope not. I really freaking hope not.
We already know that's going to happen.
Hang in there, buddy. I hope you have a really great PSD team. So I'm looking if there's any other really important information. They have the actual mandate or the actual order up here, which is pretty great. It's just he's just like, nope, we're not doing this. Nope, this is rescinded. Nope, we don't need to do this. Like reading this thing right now is awesome. He's like, no, we're not doing this. We're not making our people do that, which is awesome because, I mean, there's some we know of right now a special operations team that's being withdrawn from their operational area and held in a local U.S. base, literally held there until they provide, and these are tip of the spear guys, until they provide valid vaccine cards, and they have two options as of right now. Option number one is get vaccinated, provide a real vaccine card, and face judicial punishment for lying, or two, a dishonorable discharge. You're talking about felony-level prosecution. A dishonorable discharge is the same as a felony. You lose your rights. You lose your capability to, you know, own firearms. You forget about another job. If anyone finds out you have a DD, that's pretty much it for you. I mean, it's like having a felony. And we're going to throw away the careers of our special operations guys because some of them faked vaccine cards. I'm not condoning faking vaccine cards officially, all right? But I am saying, come on, this is what we're doing, and we're allowing this. Like, it's nuts. It's nuts.
But is it, though? Or is it exactly what you expected from the government?
Yeah, I think it might be that. Probably more that.
Yeah.
Anyways. All right, Redwire Gear Moment. John's, again, not here this week, so I'm going to be doing his Redwire Gear Moment for him. I think he comes back in 2 weeks, 1 week, something like that. I don't know. He comes and goes as he pleases these days. I don't know.
It's John.
It's John. Sharpen and oil your daily carry and daily use knives. Probably one of the biggest things we see from our people is that they forget to sharpen their daily carry pocket knives, and they forget to oil them, and the springs are not working properly, and the blades are dull, and that's because they cut open a lot of Amazon boxes, and they don't do a lot of other stuff with them. So make sure that if you've got a daily carry knife, whether ladies, it's something you carry in your purse, guys, it's something you carry in your pocket, on your belt, whatever it is, make sure it's in good operating condition. As we were taught in the Boy Scouts, the most dangerous knife is a dull one, so make sure that you are sharpening and oiling your daily use knives, and that includes also like your kitchen knives. Nothing worse than trying to go over and help someone cook a meal and their knife is, you're like,
dead.
I'm cutting this cucumber with a block of wood right now. This sucks. Anyways, Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by RedwireGear.com. All right, on to our topic and to our guest. Sky, again, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So you and I met a few months ago?
Yes.
Been a few months. And I had the opportunity to go and tour your guys' facility in Phoenix. And tell us a little bit about what Streetlight USA does specifically.
Yes. So Streetlight USA is a program for teen girls between the ages of 13 and 17 who either are confirmed as victims of sex trafficking or who have risk factors for being trafficked. So we have three specific programs on our campus at Streetlight. We have a level 2 behavioral health residential facility, and that is a trauma healing program for girls that have been trafficked. That program takes girls from all over the country. As a matter of fact, most of the kids that have come into that program are from other states. So they're coming specifically to Streetlight for healing from abuse. They stay about 45 to 90 days, sometimes longer. It just depends on how long they are approved to stay. Our second program is a group home. So we do have a contract with the Department of Child Safety here in Arizona to serve children who are in the significant trauma cohort. And in the significant trauma cohort does lie children who either are confirmed as trafficked or who have risk factors. And then we also have a pastoral care program at Streetlight. The spiritual needs of the girls we found are very important to address. So when they come into our program, they're going into one of those residential programs, and then they're able to utilize the pastoral care program as well.
Now, you mentioned at risk, and everybody thinks about, when they think of sex trafficking, I think everyone's mind goes to, mine does, either one, Liam Neeson in, you know, Taken, where he's rescuing his daughter from the sex traffic trade, or John Rambo, of course, in the new Rambo movie, where he's rescuing his niece, I believe, from, you know, the sex trade. And we think of this very dramatic process that these girls are going to go through, and they're snatched off the street, and they're taken some horrible place, and they're sold into sex slavery, and it's horrible stuff. But it's not always that dramatic.
Correct.
And the at-risk part is the part that I think a lot of people are skipping over.
Yeah.
And if you looked at either one of those girls in that movie, they were both at risk, right? Yeah. They both came from broken homes.
Yeah.
They both came from absentee parents in one way, shape, or form. They both came from mentalities of, hey, this isn't going to happen to me.
Yeah.
They were both very unaware of what was going on in their lives. They were both very rebellious in what they were doing. Like, they fit from what you described to me when we met a few months ago at the facility. You were describing these things to me, and as you know, kind of lame as it sounds to compare what's really happening in real life to some silly Hollywood movie, it made me think of that, like, wow, those girls in that movie were actually at risk before they got snatched up. And I thought that that was interesting. And also in both, of course, it's a movie, so they have to compress it. They were both essentially groomed into that process. One was lured in by a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And another was lured in by a guy that her and her friend had met while traveling. And he was very nice and he was attractive and he was, oh, let's, you know, get some information from you, et cetera.
Right.
So when we talk about at risk, mm-hmm. what does that look like?
Yeah. So three risk factors that we see with the girls at Streetlight. Children who interact with the child welfare system are very much at risk for being trafficked, as are kids who are in the LGBTQ population and kids who are runaways. So these kids that are running away, they are one decision away from meeting a trafficker and from being trafficked. That is a huge way that kids are being lured in. They're on the streets. And a lot of the kids that come to Streetlight tell me that their family is in the streets. I've had girls sit with me in my office in a ball crying because they miss their street family. And so we have to recreate what the traffickers have to offer at Streetlight. And in the girls' minds, their traffickers offer them something that resembles a family. So when we're taking children out of what they believe is a safe place, because the kids that come to Streetlight have no idea that they're victims, it's hard. And it takes some time before we're able to unravel the web of lies and deceit that the girls have been trapped into. So those are the three main risk factors that we see, Glenn. Kids interacting with the child welfare system, kids that are on AWOL status or running away constantly, and kids in the LGBTQ population.
So as parents, we sit here. When I left your facility, of course, I don't think I told you this part, but like when I left your facility, I went out, walked out and sat in my truck for a minute, you know. I just sit there for a minute.
Yeah.
I really had to think about some of the things that I had just learned and had been talked to by you and your great staff. And I mean, it took a minute. I'm thinking, man, as a father of daughters, wow, like this is something I can't even imagine for any of my daughters. And then driving home and thinking about it, you know, even more, it was just – it wasn't even thinking – now I'm not thinking about the, oh, I got to watch my kids because they're going to get snatched off the street and, you know, I'm going to have to go Liam Neeson this. That's not the reality because, again, when I really – after I left your facility and I was thinking about, as cliche as it is, those two movies – it was like those girls, if you looked at them, really had some of those potential issues that put them in bad situations. So you mentioned these other processes of being involved with child welfare, being involved in certain, you know, communities or ideas of life, and being constant runaways. What are things for parents to look for mm-hmm. in their kids? Because that's always a concerning thing.
Yes.
You know, and especially if you've got kids like Drew and I, you know, both have previous marriages and we've got kids. Some of our kids bounce back and forth between parents. You know, they're with one parent 50% of the time, they're with us 50% of the time. And that makes us a little nervous sometimes about, you know, the kind of care and attention that they're always getting and what they're being told or what they're being taught. And I think is that kind of a risk factor as well? I mean, in my head, it seems to be, but you're the expert. What do you think?
So what I always tell parents is be overly involved in the lives of your children. Trust, but verify. And the number one thing that I'm seeing that's a risk factor for children nowadays, just kids who are from two-parent homes, is social media. In 2020, there was a 98% increase in attempts online by child sex traffickers to traffic children.
You say a
98% increase. And that statistic comes from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. In Phoenix, in 2020, in the Maricopa County area, there was a 30% increase in cases of child sex trafficking. And some of the reasons that were cited is because children were online more. Because of the lockdowns, children had an increase in a desire to be social. And traffickers know this. So they are playing on vulnerabilities of children and getting in through social media. During the lockdowns, parents were supervising less for whatever reason. Maybe they were working in the home more. Maybe they were working outside of the home more. But we did see a 30% increase in trafficking cases just here in the Maricopa County area. So something to look for as well with your kids. Does your child have a phone that you didn't give them? Do they have a burner phone? Are they missing school excessively? Do they have absences that you are unaware of? Do they have money and they don't have a job? Or do they have an abundance of money that you didn't give them? These are all things that we also want to look for. Another thing, do they have a controlling boyfriend or girlfriend, whether it's the same age or older? You know, and we've got to have these conversations with our kids. As hard as it is, the earlier the better. I'll give you an example. My 7-year-old son, he was 6 at the time. He was going to a different school for summer. And at this school, the kids changed in gyms and before they would go on activities in the community. And of course, my mind went directly to changing in a gym with other boys and adults. I need to prepare him. So I had a conversation with him and I told him about good touch, bad touch, what is appropriate, what isn't. Well, fast forward a couple of months, he was visiting his grandmother and he was playing outside with a girl his age and an older girl. The older girl told him to touch her sister inappropriately in her private parts. And my son said, well, that's not appropriate. Well, had I not prepared him, I don't know what his response would have been. So as parents, it's really never too early. And we have to, of course, speak to them appropriately at their age level. You know, we want them to be able to process the information that we're giving them. But having open dialogue about hard things, you know, as parents, when I was growing up, we never talked about these kinds of things. My parents never prepared me for anything. It seemed to be a safer time 30 years ago. The reality is, of what we're living in now, we have to prepare our children. We have to be in their business. We've got to trust but verify.
What are the educational tools that people have access to? Like, I could see we're so into education that all I think about is all the time, like, now how are we going to teach everybody about this? How am I going to teach everyone in the world about what this guy's talking about? Do you guys have, does Streetlight USA have, or do you partner with anybody who has these kinds of videos? Like, for example, good touch, bad touch videos to, you know, help us teach our kids, or trust but verify ideas, or, you know, videos along that thing, so that you could show people, like, hey, here's, if you've got an at-risk kid or you're worried about that, here's some of the things you might be concerned about. Are there educational opportunities like that?
Thorn has an amazing website and is a great resource for parents.
THORN?
Correct. Okay. Yes.
I'm actually going to write that down. Yeah.
Thorn is the one that I would recommend, especially for parents. They have a link just for parents, things to talk to their kids about, what to say, what not to say. They are by far the greatest resource for parents in this day and age. They give statistics on that came from survivors. Mm. So they work really closely with survivors to help tell the story of the survivors, which is really who we want to hear from. So that would be my recommendation.
Just thorn.com?
Correct.
Now, what are some signs that you talked about too much money or money you didn't give them, having an extra phone or having a burner phone, you know, having kind of the tension from someone who's maybe too controlling or anything like that? What are some other signs, if there are any other ones, that are also important that you see of a kid getting groomed? And I think the reason I'm asking this is so often we get, as I'm discussing this kind of stuff with students for various different programs that we teach, and I talk a little bit about, you know, preparing your family for emergencies and talking to your kids about various different things. And people will ask me often, like, well, what do you teach your kids about? And it's stuff like this and, you know, things related topics. And a lot of times people think, well, you know, my kid goes to a good school. He comes from a strong household and a strong family, and you know, we already have the ability to provide this kid, boy or girl, you know, with what they need, and they don't need to be out there seeking anything. And I think those people are almost inadvertently potentially putting their kids into a risky situation because they go, well, hey, I trust my kid. I'm not going to monitor them. You know, they never really go any dangerous place. I know their friends. I know who they're hanging out with. What are some of the maybe more subtle signs that kids are being groomed or that they need to be talked to?
Mm-hmm. So about 10 years ago, my husband is the executive director of the Phoenix Dream Center, and I launched the human trafficking program at the Dream Center back in 2009. So shortly after we began, we hosted a conference, and we had a former trafficker speak at this conference. And he spoke about things that he used to do to children and to women. One thing that he said that always stuck with me is this. He said, the first thing that I rape is someone's mind. And so we can't discount the psychological aspects of when people are victims of trafficking. So to your question, Glenn, if a child starts to withdraw, if their personality changes a little bit, if they aren't as outgoing, if they're not as communicative, these could be signs that it's time to have a conversation with your child. In the life of a child or a woman that's trafficked, or even a boy, there is a controlling person. So typically what traffickers do when they start grooming these young men, young women, or children, these girls fall in love with their trafficker. They believe that their trafficker is their boyfriend. And so the process that that child or young man or young woman went through psychologically, emotionally, to get to the point where they believe that they are in love with someone who is abusing them and selling them is great. So little subtleties of with being withdrawn. Your kid, have they changed a little bit? Are they not as loving? Is their clothing different? Are they wearing clothing that's too small or too big? Do they have older friends in their lives? These are all little subtle things that could point to we need to have a conversation.
Now, one of the reasons that, you know, we had discussed you coming on the show and talking about all this was obviously to expose more people to Streetlight USA, because yes, it was something I was totally unaware of until actually one of our training clients turned me on to it and told me about some work that he was doing with you guys, and that was really interesting to me. But another reason is just to kind of shift minds a little bit of our listeners, because we often think like Instagram? I think there's an Instagram page called Public Hangings for Pedophiles or something like that. And it's like there's all these people who are like, yeah, let's kill the bad guys. Let's kill the bad guys. And yeah, the majority of our listeners are like, yeah, just give me the address and we'll show up and we'll handle this business. And then, you know, these people aren't going to be raping any kids ever again.
Right.
And that is a solution that, while very attractive, is also very fantastical, because the likelihood of us being able to have an effect on the sex trafficking trade, for example, by just going out, let's say, and killing sex traffickers,
yeah,
isn't really going to happen. Look, man, sex trafficking has been around forever.
Yeah.
So how can we have an effect on preventing the victims of sex trafficking and then, God forbid, when it happens, positively impacting their lives? And I think that's where really I want our listeners to get the most out of what we're talking here today. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really pay attention, guys and gals. That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
How to prevent this. So much of what we talk about in our shows is, you know, yeah, lethal force, if you have to use it in self-defense, is what it is. And there's certainly a conversation for that. But how do we avoid and deter that? You know, medical response is great, and there's certainly a time and place for that, and we need to know how to do that. But how do we prevent that? All of the things that we do are primarily based on prevention, and yet when it comes to child sex trafficking, everyone's like, let's just find these sex traffickers and just kill them. And we tend to overlook then the victims, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Especially since meeting with you a few months ago, I've really kind of started to change my mind about, well, okay, that would be really great, but also very fantastical. What can we do for the victims or the at-risk people in the meantime, because those are the ones we can really have the most effect on?
Yeah.
And so you're – from what it seems like you're saying, maybe one of the biggest threats – and correct me if there's a bigger threat – but it seems like one of the biggest threats to our kids and how they're being trafficked or how they're being groomed for it is so many different social media outlets. I mean, you think social media really is the driving factor right now behind sex trafficking?
Ever since 2020, absolutely. Yeah. That is absolutely what we're seeing. And so there is an app called CyberDive. And CyberDive is something that parents can put on their kids' phones. So as much as we want to give our kids privacy, mm-hmm, it is so important to, on the front end, make sure that we've given our kids the tools that they need to keep themselves safe, even though they may not believe or feel like they need to keep themselves safe. But CyberDive is one partners that partners with the Streetlight and the Phoenix Dream Center, and it's an app that will detect specific words or phrases that are being said to your child or that your child is saying. And so this is something that I found to be very useful when it comes to the prevention end. But you know what, Glenn? Something that we can do, and it seems so small, and when you're a parent and you're going about your day-to-day life, it just seems so normal. But in our own homes and in our communities, what we can do is truly just parent our kids. Love them.
What a concept.
Talk to them. You know, be involved. Be and yes, we're parents, so we discipline, we have to train, we have to grow. But in a sense, be someone that your child looks to as a friend. Be someone that your child looks to as a safe place, as a place where they can go to talk about really challenging things. We want to be that person for our son. My husband and I want to be the person he goes to when he has questions, if he's faced with something challenging. And we want to be the people that he trusts with really hard things. And so as much as we can have that balance in parenting between structure, discipline, and you can trust me with hard things, I'm not going to beat you to death if you tell me something hard. Mm-hmm. Like I used to think of my parents, we want to try to be that. But also in community, you know, changing the laws has been huge, where a man can no longer say, oh, I didn't know she was 15. We've got to, on the citizen level, truly be a loud voice for the victims. Speak for those who cannot speak for themselves. Go to the Capitol, protest. Years ago, when we first started in this work, we found out that children were being trafficked in strip clubs. And in 2010, I took a group of people and we protested outside of these strip clubs, night after night after night. And I remember a few times, one night specifically, they saw us coming and I don't know if it was the owner, someone from the strip club outside of the back door took two young girls. They looked 11 and 12 years old, took them out of the back door and whisk them away. So when we come, law enforcement comes. And so it really helped to shine the light on nefarious things that were going on in these strip clubs around the valley. So whatever you want to do to get involved, get involved. Whether it's at a Boys and Girls Club, whether you go and you protest and make your voice heard in certain areas, and then be present for your kids. It's really that day-to-day, I'm here, I'm present, I am with you, that prevents a lot of these things from truly happening in the lives of our children.
I have a question. What ages is this really specifically targeting? Does it start? I'm assuming the grooming process starts at a very, very young age. But for, you know, the little kids, like how you talk to your son at 6, they obviously don't have access to the internet. So would that be more grooming towards people, relatives, friends of people? So what age bracket, obviously you start them really young, kind of just being on the lookout and aware, but what's the target age for this?
So the average age of sex trafficking here in the state of Arizona is 13 to 14 years old. Now, when it comes to the grooming process, the really sad, unfortunate reality is most of our girls and most children know their traffickers. There's familial trafficking that's on the rise, where kids are trafficked by family members, uncles, fathers, grandparents. But even outside of the circle of family, most of the kids that we see, they know their traffickers, whether, again, it's a neighbor or someone in the community. So when we were growing up, it was stranger danger.
Right.
But nowadays, it's really important to have the conversation about family.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a person at the grocery store that you see all the time. And having those conversations with our children, age appropriate, but having those conversations so they know to protect themselves and they know when something might be wrong is really important. And again, Thorn is a great resource for parents.
And I'm assuming little girls are more targeted than little boys.
They are. They are. Yes.
Which was actually going to be my question to you as well, is boys versus girls. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all see the girls being trafficked. That's always that's what's pushed in Hollywood. That's what's pushed on the billboards. That's what's pushed, you know, kind of, I think, from most ideas. And it appeals in a I don't say weird way, but in a different kind of way, it appeals more to us to like protect our young girls. And so because of that, it's like you don't get to touch the young girls in my community. You know, we'll find you. But it's not that we wouldn't allow that for young boys, but it's something that we don't think about as much. We don't see the young boys who are being trafficked. So kind of the numbers of boys versus girls who are being trafficked of any age, what do you see with that? You guys deal specifically with girls, correct?
We do deal specifically with girls,
and
yes.
So what do you see the numbers-wise, just because you're involved in this line of work, what do you see the numbers-wise of boys versus girls?
So what we see typically, girls are going to be trafficked at least 2 times more than boys are. But boys are trafficked. The sad reality, there is not a program that I'm aware of in the United States for minor male victims of sex trafficking. And what we're seeing with boys.
Wow,
when,
that's really sad.
Shocking,
it is. Yes,
actually.
It is.
Like our male depression episode.
Yeah.
Guys just left to their own accord, I guess.
They are.
Good luck, boys.
Now, the Phoenix Dream Center does have a program for males that are trafficked, but those are adult males. Those are males between the ages of 18 and 24.
Okay.
And so that program is typically always full. But what we see with the boys have so much shame and guilt around their trafficking. They really don't know how to talk about it. And so it can take years for them to open up before they're comfortable talking about what happened to them.
Yeah.
And they're typically only comfortable sharing with women. So at the Phoenix Dream Center, we've built our male program around having women come in and be the therapists and the survivor liaisons and the advocates for these boys because they're just not comfortable having those conversations with men yet. So the boys take a long, long time to heal because it takes a long time before they're comfortable to talk about their victimization.
Now, what are some of the things that you see, you know, in public places that people – like signs that we can look for? Because you hear stories in the news about, you know, somebody got – was on an airplane and he saw some young girl and he made that, you know, right connection and then he saved her or whatever. And it's very – again, very fantastical. But from a more realistic standpoint, what are things that you – can recommend to people? What are we looking for in public places?
So does a child look uncomfortable with the person that they're with? Do they look like they are fearful of authority? Is the clothing that they're wearing too big or too small? Are they aggressive toward authority? These are all things that could indicate something else. However, in the data that we're seeing, things like being uncomfortable, not looking you in the eyes, looking to maybe females for support are things that we can look at in public places and could be an indicator.
And one of the things that I think is important is like companion buy-in here. You mentioned your husband is involved in a similar line of work, and so it's really easy for you and he, let's say you're in public places and you're both like, hey, look at that kid, right? That let's talk about this problem, like, you know, like Drew and I would do for a violent threat, for example, like, hey, what's this person up to over here? Watch their hands. What are they doing? So you and your husband have this joint mind as far as we want to help these kids. This is what we're looking for. We're totally on board with talking to, you know, our son about this, and that's really awesome. How do you recommend people who don't have that companion buy-in? Because that's something we find in our line of work where, great, it's like you shared some incredibly useful information with us, and you know, that's what we find in the self-defense world and in the emergency preparedness world is one member of a companionship is like, I carry a gun and I carry a med kit and I'm ready and I'm prepared, I'm physically fit. And then my partner over here is a really great person, but they're not really an asset, you know?
Yeah.
And how do I open their eyes to the fact that they might need to have to defend themselves or they might have to respond to an emergency or they might have a flat tire? Like there's people who go, man, I can't even get my partner to check their spare tire to make sure it's inflated, much less carry a gun or a med kit or open their eyes or get their head out of their phone or whatever it is. So how do you recommend people kind of get companion buy-in if I, you know, didn't have someone like Drew as my companion who already has buy-in on this idea, and she was kind of like, I think you're just being kind of paranoid. You know, we live a good life. Our kid's not in danger. We're involved, air quotes, you know, things like that. How do you recommend people talk to their companions then, whether that's co-parents or spouses or whatever it is? How do they talk to their companions about being more involved in not just their community and watching for public place stuff, but their own kids?
I find that awareness is a huge factor. I run into people nowadays who still aren't aware about the problems of human trafficking. And once you are aware, once you have the data and you have seen evil face to face, it's hard to look away. And so I would say awareness. You know, let's talk about the statistics. Let's talk about the amount of children that are being trafficked in our neighborhood. Because the reality is sometimes we're not going to move unless we're affected. And if we believe that child sex trafficking is happening in our neighborhood, could happen in our children's school, then we're more apt to do something about it. So I would say share the data. You know, share about what's really happening in our community to our children. And once your eyes are open, I can't imagine that someone would not want to be more involved with this issue.
What about for the parents who just don't want to believe it? They're kind of like, I know it's there, but I don't really want anything to do with it. Kind of just turn a blind eye.
It's scary.
It is scary.
It's scary. So it's, maybe people don't want to be. We see the same thing with, you know, our line of work is people are like, I don't want to believe that there's violent, terrible people out there. I don't want to believe that people can do that kind of thing to another human. So I just kind of want to turn my eye over here and not just pretend that what's happening.
Yeah, and even though they come and take courses with us, they're still kind of like, I don't know if I'll ever use this. I mean, we just had somebody not very long ago ask if they could shoot somebody in the knee versus.
Yeah. Right. But what if I could? I'm like, you're making a lot of assumptions about your marksmanship capability, first of all.
But it's how do you have those conversations with people that know that this exists, just don't want to fully admit that it's a reality that could possibly happen?
You know, it takes some time to make that mental shift, to cross that psychological line, right? Before you really believe that this type of evil exists in the world, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about true evil existing in our society, and they're harming children.
Right.
So it's very possible that some people are just not there. They're just not ready to cross that psychological line and say, okay, this is happening, I believe it, and I want to do something about it. And so I would say it's just sometimes going to take time.
Yeah.
You know, just time. Maybe they have to hear more statistics, or hearing a survivor story sometimes is what it takes. And we work really closely with survivors who are willing to share their stories. And so any events that we have coming up, we have a lot of awareness events that are coming up that survivors share their stories. Usually that can pierce the heart of someone who is just on that edge, who hasn't yet crossed that line into believing and supporting and doing something about it. Because survivor stories, I mean, once you hear them, that's it.
So let's talk about some of those events you guys have coming
up.
So what are some of the things that people can do just with events to start, one, raising awareness in themselves, their families, their kids, their partners, whatever it may be, and maybe even be helping Streetlight USA along the way. So tell us about some of the things you guys have coming up soon.
So January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And January 22nd, we have a Morning of Hope breakfast downtown at the Renaissance Hotel. Okay. So this is an awareness breakfast. The Attorney General is going to be speaking at it, as are other leaders in the community. And it's really a time for us to share about the programs at Streetlight USA, share survivor stories, and about what we're doing in the city of Phoenix to combat human trafficking. We also have a Stop Traffic Walk on January 29th. That is a walk that raises awareness as well for human trafficking, specifically familial trafficking in Colorado City, and then adult and child sex trafficking here in Phoenix. That is going to be at the Peoria Sports Complex on the 29th of January.
Okay. And what time does that start?
That starts at 5 p.m.
At 5 p.m.
Yes.
And what was the January 22nd event?
Yes, that is the Morning of Hope breakfast, and that is at 10 a.m. at the Phoenix Renaissance Hotel downtown.
And how do you participate in buying tickets or getting involved with this?
Yes. So to buy tickets to the Morning of Hope breakfast, you can go to the Phoenix Dream Center website, which is phoenixdreamcenter.org.
Okay. So phoenixdreamcenter.org.
Yes.
I'm just trying to get notes on this so we can help you guys promote this, obviously.
Thank you.
So phoenixdreamcenter.org, you can find out about the January 22nd event, the January 29th event. And if you can't make those kinds of events, there's still ways to be involved with Streetlight.
Yes.
I will tell everyone, our listener base, and I mentioned this on the show last week when we were talking about the show we were going to be doing this week, and something that really kind of touched me when we went to or when I went to see your facility. And that was the idea that – which, first of all, is an amazing facility. Like, it's very well put together.
Thank you.
It's very secure. I like the security. Obviously, that's what we do. So yeah. It was like, how secure is this place really going to be? It's pretty secure. It's nice. It gave a good feeling. And the whole place is very, very well laid out. One of the things that really stuck out to me was you guys talking about the boutique that you're working on opening. As a dad with daughters who take some shopping from time to time, it really kind of plucked at my heartstrings that some of these girls, with all the emotional and mental and spiritual problems that you've already discussed they have never gone out and just bought their own clothes. I mean, this weekend I took one of my daughters and her friend to the mall and just let them roam the mall, you know, which is hard for me to do. Just let them go roam the mall, right? Like, I knew where they were. They don't know I knew where they were. But I knew where they were the whole time. but they're roaming the mall and they're shopping and they're doing their thing. And to think that there's other girls have literally been denied that, not because it's like, they don't have any extra money or not that kind of thing, but literally have been forcibly denied that opportunity. Was just something knowing that the show was coming, you know, today. I was really thinking about that a lot at the mall. And I'm of course observing all these other teenage girls that are out there with their friends and they're having fun with their families. And I'm just like, man, some of these girls have just, you know, the Streetlight USA gals have never had this opportunity. So you guys are doing this boutique, which I don't know why it just sticks out to me so much, but it's just something I'm really excited about. You're building a different building that's going to be a store where the girls can go in and shop.
Yes.
How can people get involved in that? What do you need? Because this is something that on a national level, like, look, if you can come to the Phoenix stuff, that's awesome. Yeah. But there's so many of our listeners. I mean, a huge portion of our listeners are nowhere near Phoenix and probably aren't going to fly here for those events. So how can they help Streetlight USA and specifically with this boutique, which I think is such an amazing opportunity?
Yeah. So this is the Triumph Boutique. And Glenn, just like you said, the girls that have come to Streetlight, some of them have only worn clothes that their trafficker forced them to wear, bought for them. So being able to go shopping is huge. So we are still in the fundraising stage, looking at getting the building on our campus in the next couple of months. Mm. So we do need support. They can go directly to our website, to streetlightusa.org, and give toward the Triumph Boutique. Once we schedule all of the materials to come in, we will need help with building the boutique. So coming in and donating time for labor. We also need things for the boutique like jewelry and materials for decoration. All of those things can be found on our website at www.streetlightusa.org.
And those are the donation opportunities
Correct.
You're talking about.
Cool. Yes.
Right on. Well, I can tell you for sure we're definitely going to be there swinging hammers and help you build.
Thank you.
And we have enough. I mentioned this before. Like, we have such a big alumni group. There's absolutely no reason once you guys get your plans going. We had talked about that before. But once you guys get your plans going, let us know.
Well.
And we'll reach out to all of our people and basically demand that they help us or else.
Thank you.
But I think it's just a great opportunity. And for all of our people who are on a national level, here's something you can do.
Absolutely.
And they can send physical goods as well as money.
Correct.
So, you know, if you're like me and you're always hesitant to give organizations money, and we vetted Streetlight USA to the point we don't think this isn't the Wounded Warrior Project where they're like paying themselves $500,000 a year or anything like that. So, but if you're like me, you're always really hesitant to give money. So if you don't want to give money, one of the things that always tells me an organization is on the up and up, this is me personally, something that tells me an organization is always on the up and up is when they go, you don't have to send us money. You can send us these items.
Yes.
Here's a list of items that we need. We'll take those too. Put them in a box and ship them. That's always kind of what tells me. And that's what you guys are doing. You're saying we're happy to take the goods as much as we are the donations, whichever is better or easier for you. So this is an opportunity, you guys, to freaking nut up and stop standing on the sidelines and actually get involved in something that is important to all of us.
Yeah.
And this is a topic that comes up more and more and more in our classes, especially with safety and with families and things like that, where people are concerned about the sex trafficking and they're concerned about how it affects not just our children, as in the ones that we created, but our children from a community standpoint. It is something that's affecting innocent kids who don't know any other way of life than this. And for a lot of us, you know, personal for a second, but a lot of us who have been other places in the world and have seen how brainwashed a kid can become if it starts at the right time. Mm-hmm. When you say that these girls are in love with their you know, traffickers and they think that they're their boyfriends and they think that they're their lovers and everything, and we've seen that in other parts of the world, and we know that that exists. This is how, I mean, this is how we build terrorists in other parts of the world, that we just start early enough.
Yep.
And convince them for long enough. Anybody told something long enough will believe it. And this is our opportunity here at home. So especially for, you know, all my veterans out there, remember what we were willing to do when we went to other countries? Remember that? Let's do even – if you put even half of that energy and effort into what we do here at home, what a different place our home could be. I think of all the things we were willing to do, how long we were willing to leave our families, how the effort and energy we were putting in, the things we were willing to physically do in quote-unquote service to our country, which I think everyone who listens to the show knows how I feel about that. But all those things we were willing to do, now be willing to do even just a portion of that for an organization like Streetlight USA, and the effect that you could have could be absolutely tremendous. So like, get off your ass and start getting involved in the problems in our communities. And this is absolutely one of those problems. Like, I don't care about politics. I don't care if you wear a mask or don't. I don't care if you get vaccinated or don't. Don't force it on me, but you do whatever you personally want to do based on your own personal liberty, as long as it doesn't harm me. I don't really care what you do. This is your opportunity to stop worrying about that and start getting more involved in your community. What are other things that people can do to help Streetlight USA? I think spread the word, right? Just let everybody know that this even exists.
Yes.
But what are some other things that they can do?
And I do want to say, Glenn, you know, it is almost impossible for these girls to escape their traffickers, and it's even almost more impossible for them to recover without help. Only 2% of human trafficking victims are ever rescued.
2%?
Wow. 2% of human trafficking victims are ever rescued.
That's insane.
Jeez.
And so we're really going after the 2%. So anything that your listeners can do to support, maybe you can get your local church involved, or you're a part of a mom's group or a dad's group that can bring in hygiene products and clothing for the girls, do a cover drive for the girls at Streetlight. We also have a big sister program if you're here local in Phoenix. And starting in January, the girls are going to be paired up with big sisters. That's something that is absolutely important, that these girls have a woman who is a safe person, who can model what it looks like to be a woman, because these girls have no idea. And so prayer, you know, for those of you out there that are prayer warriors, please pray for these girls, the ones that are still in the streets, the ones that are being trafficked, the ones who need to be rescued, and then pray for the healing for the girls at Streetlight. There's so many ways to get involved. And we do list all of the ways to get involved on our website at streetlightusa.org.
For people who are in other states,
yes,
if they can't find an organization like this in their state, could they contact you guys directly? I'm sure you have a network of
absolutely
organizations.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Do you know of – is there in every state, is there something like Streetlight?
So from the research I've done, we are one of less than 10 organizations that's designed specifically to serve child victims of sex trafficking in the country. So we're very unique. However, in every state, there is a Department of Child Safety. There are advocacy centers, and there are groups of people that care about the trafficking of children. So find your local center, find your local family center, advocacy center, reach out to them, see how you can get involved with saving victims and with helping them transition from trauma to triumph. Because without the community, these kids are going to be lost forever.
Man, I'm processing a lot of information right now. What got you involved in this? I think that's kind of how we'll wrap things up.
Okay.
What made you want to do this? Because this is, I can only imagine, you know, an emotional drain. Mm-hmm. It's an emotional commitment. It's a spiritual commitment. The mental and physical commitment that you make. How did you get involved in this?
So back in the 90s, I was in college and I was living in an apartment complex. And the owner of the apartment complex came to me and said, hey, I have a friend who is an adult film star and she's looking for an assistant. She knew I was in college and she knew that I was looking for work. And she introduced me to her. And we became fast friends. So she was a Vivid girl. She was in the adult film industry. And I became her personal assistant. I took care of her son. I took care of her dry cleaning. I oversaw her fan club. And I did basically anything that she needed. And there were times when I was on the set with her, when she was filming with Vivid. And I was in and out of strip clubs with her. For years, we were international, we were national. Now, back in the 90s, we didn't talk about human trafficking. We didn't, this wasn't sex trafficking. It was adult sex work. It was not sex trafficking. Fast forward 10 years, in 2009, my husband and I were working at the Phoenix Dream Center, and our pastor, Pastor Tommy Barnett, came across an article about the trafficking of children in Phoenix, and he realized that Phoenix is one of the hubs. We are in the circuit. The circuit is Phoenix, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, where the girls are moved. And he wanted to do something about it. And at this time, I had, this was 10 years after I had met Tara, I had decided that I wanted to do something to help women who were either victimized or who were in the adult film industry. And I was looking to start my own organization, start my own 501. I actually named it. But here comes Pastor Tommy saying, hey, we have an entire floor of rooms at the Dream Center that are vacant, and women and children are being trafficked. Can we help them? Well, my background is in nonprofit management. I have my degree in psychology. So it was just this perfect timing of opportunity to do something that I was passionate about. We had the space. So we just got to work. In 2009, we started renovating the rooms. I had a heart for it, and I was so determined, Glenn, to, at the time, the word was rescue these women and children, because I saw what they went through. When I was working for Tara, I saw the abuse and the psychological abuse, the physical abuse, the shame, the pain that she went through. And God really used that experience to help others. And so 2009, the human trafficking program was born at the Phoenix Dream Center. We served children and we served adults. And I've been in the anti-trafficking movement ever since.
Wow. That's incredible.
That's amazing to come from that kind of industry and see, like, really see it firsthand, you know. And that's another aspect of what people aren't thinking about here.
Correct.
You know. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners about Streetlight USA, any projects, events, or anything just kind of general that you've got?
Yeah, you know, one of the projects that we're working on right now, we're looking to expand our behavioral health program. So we are in the process of remodeling one of the cottages so we can help more girls. Right now, we do have 35 beds at Streetlight for victims of human trafficking. And our long-term vision is to expand to 100 beds. So as we're in the expansion phase, you know, we could really just covet your prayers and support anything that you have to offer us, whether you're here local or across the country. We have our wish list on our website. So thank you for your support and thank you for having me here today.
Absolutely. And that list can be found at streetlightusa.org. You guys are on Instagram.
Yes.
You're on Facebook.
Yes.
And I do want to say, when you guys are looking it up on Facebook and Instagram, make sure it's got the actual Streetlight logo, because there's other various organizations that use the word Streetlight in it. So make sure you're looking up the actual Streetlight USA.
It's Streetlight USA Cares on Instagram.
Yeah. Okay. Streetlight USA Cares. Yes. And Facebook, I know it was different too, because when I was tagging them in the thing, what exactly is it on Facebook? Do you remember, Sky?
It's on Facebook. It is Streetlight USA.
It is Streetlight USA. I just remember there was like two. There was something that was real close. So make sure it's the actual Streetlight logo. If you guys are gonna obviously get involved, you'll know immediately, because the other organization has nothing to do with this organization. So it'll be pretty obvious. But definitely look at that. Sky, thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you
for Streetlight USA, and thank you for the commitment that you and your husband have put into the community. That means a lot. You know, you're not just doing a job, but you're doing a job that really impacts the community. We definitely appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Any parting questions, Drew?
I think she covered everything.
So again, make sure you look up streetlightusa.org to get the wish list. Any other information, phoenixdreamcenter.org to sign up for, if you guys are in the Phoenix area, the January 22nd or January 29th events. Those are coming up soon. Anything you guys can do to help out, now's the time. All kinds of opportunities with Streetlight USA to send them physical goods to, you know, financial donations and a variety of other things you can find on their website. Our independence training moment, which seems so weird to shift gears from that to this, to ending the show. I'm just like, oh, I guess goodbye. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to shift gears from that. Usually it's
heavy, heavy show.
Kind of heavy, man. I've been looking forward to this show. Drew and I have both been looking forward to it.
Yep.
So our independence training moment for this week, we kind of shifted that away from just training stuff to what Drew and Glenn did this past week to prepare any of the four zones for an emergency. This week, I checked as the sun is, you know, rising later and setting earlier. I made sure I checked the batteries in all of our lights, checked all of our light bulbs, and made sure all the lights are going to be on, because obviously we want to make sure kids in this particular case are safe. When they turn on a flashlight, it's 100% charged. When they turn on a light, bulb's not going to go out, et cetera. That way our kids can always have light if they need it in an emergency. So that's what we worked on this last week. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information via email, info@trainingaz.com, and we will give you all the information about how to bring us out to your area to host our classes. That's primarily how we travel if we're not doing corporate work, is through our host program. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, Red Wire Gear, and MRC Phoenix, and of course, Streetlight USA. Remember, on Instagram, that's going to be Streetlight USA Cares. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Be sure to look up the other shows and other services that our network offers. They make all of this possible for us. Next week, we're going to be talking about beginning the process of emergency preparedness, and if you're already begun the process, maybe where you might have some holes. So kind of exposing the holes in your emergency preparedness or beginning the process if you haven't really started yet. Until next time, stay safe and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.